live. And we are live. Check that out. Look at that.
Beautiful timing.
All right. So, yeah, we're also going to have a an audio version of this that'll be released later in the week. So, all right, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen of Irish Nation, this is the Leprechaun Connection Podcast. Mike, Sean, and Bruce here with you. Visit our website at leprechaunconnection.com where you'll find a link to our merchandise store, our Patreon, and a link to donate to St. Jude. That's leprechaunconnection.com. Welcome, lads and lasses. Joining us on the show, former Irish speedster, number 18, Joey Getherall. Joey, how we doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Like I mentioned to you guys, it's definitely a pleasure to be with you guys and be a part of the show tonight.
You got it. Well, we sincerely appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show. I know time is precious these days, and then, so the fact that you took just a few minutes to come on with us, that we really do appreciate it. So let's kind of break the ice here. We wanted to talk about so what's keeping you busy these days? I mean, you talked about your son earlier before we went on the air, and
What doesn't keep me busy? I started all over. My wife and I, we got a 2-year-old that's about to be 3 and actually going on 13, I think. And then I got a 11-year-old and a 12-year-old. So they're nonstop. And we talked a little bit about before. I know I was trying to come on the show a couple weeks ago, but my son fractured his kneecap. So trying to deal with that. I'm dealing with the kid that's injured, and then chasing around the little one. I got work, and then also assisting my wife, and she's nonstop. She runs a few facilities for guys with developmental disabilities. So it's nonstop in the Getherall household.
Wow. Never a dull moment. That's incredible. Yeah. I'm sure it keeps you busy. My youngest is 3 also, so I can relate.
Okay, but exactly. No, my pain, but it's right. Definitely. I definitely wouldn't trade it for the world. She's our little sunshine, so she's definitely a godsend.
They keep us younger. That's what we'll say, right?
Definitely no. It feels like I'm aging. Definitely no. They're chasing around, and yeah.
So I hear you.
It's nonstop, and and sometimes at work, I got to deal with going out to call outs at work. So it's one of those nonstop situations.
I got you. Joey, people have been inspired by your ability to play bigger than your stature. What would you say to kids out there looking to fulfill their dreams when they encounter people who doubt them?
I definitely try to, let my kids know also, hopefully they don't get my genes and it skips a generation. They get my dad's and his family's height. So, it's 6 foot plus height, I have uncles 6'4", another one 6'2", and dad was 6 foot. So definitely didn't get their height, but, anyone who's on the shorter stature, I would definitely tell them, don't allow, people's opinions of them, make a difference in their life and impact the things they want to do in the future. I never saw my height personally as a disadvantage. I always saw it as an advantage, even though probably it wasn't. I just played with that confidence and used my quickness and speed as an advantage for myself. So whatever my weakness was, I tried to improve on that. But when your height, was an issue, you try to make up for those little things. And I tried to do that, like I said, with speed and quickness, and made sure my football acumen on the field was better than the next guy. Fortunately, I always was given that chance and opportunity at Notre Dame with my coaches, and they gave me the opportunity to play. And whenever I was given that chance, I tried to take advantage of it.
That's awesome.
I'd say you grabbed it with both hands.
I tried.
It was electric watching you play. And I mean, just asking that question, hearing you answer it, it showed in your work ethic on and off the field. And you mentioned your dad. Your dad seems like a guy with an incredible story. And rumor has it that he was pretty involved in your recruitment process also. Can you talk about your relationship with him? And how it shaped your attitude in sports and life in general?
My dad, he has his bio is pretty incredible. You know, he grew up in, you know, the inner city of Boston and in the projects out in Charlestown, Massachusetts, you know, little area of Boston. But and he joined the military, joined the Marine Corps. He said it saved his life. And, you know, he said the Marine Corps impacted his life. So he had that stern drill sergeant mentality, and he translated that and joined law enforcement, LAPD. He had an illustrious career, a legendary career. But, you know, with that being said, being a tough, stern dad, I think and having a son, and I think you're going to butt heads. We definitely butted heads, and we definitely had our disagreements, but it was his way or the highway. And having a dad like that, it sometimes didn't translate in the best relationship, but I always had respect for him. I think, like I said, he had the old school mentality, where I think this day and age, I think kids have a hard time dealing with that tough love. And but I tried to do that with my kids. And sometimes I try to take a different approach with my dad. I try to give him that tough love, but I explain why I do certain things. Rather, was growing up with my dad, it was his way and there was no explanation. You just do it and shut your mouth and that's mm-hmm. it. And I always respected him. And I know at the end of the day, my dad wanted nothing but the best for me. And I knew that. That's why I always respected and valued his opinion. But one thing I did was I was a self-motivator. I always saw how he worked. He was really into working out and taking care of himself. So I always had that same mentality. If I had the opportunity to work out, train, I was doing it. I didn't need somebody to, you know, give me a push. I did it on my own. It was one thing I tried to explain to people and said, you know, what do I need to do for my kids? How did you do it? How'd you get that scholarship? What do I need to keep pushing my kids? I need to get that personal coach. I need to do it. At the end of the day, I try to tell people they're going to have it or not. They got to have that self-motivation. They got to have that push. If you look at all the, if you look at all those top athletes and top recruits, they're self-motivated. And of course, there's that 1% where they just got, you know, gifted talents and mm-hmm. Extraordinary traits where they don't need to train. They just have it. But, you know, it only can take you so far in life. So again, going back to the relationship, it wasn't the best, but as I got older, our relationship got much better. He was somebody I could rely on and bounce questions off of how I should do things with my boys, because as a grandfather, he had a different approach of certain things. He tried to be more of a softy with the grandkids.
Right. And I'm thinking,
what? That's not
where was this?
Yeah, that's what grandpas do.
Yeah, so and the boys were, you always said, Dad, your papa was tough. I was like, yeah, he was. It's, you know, it was, you know, old school, bring out the leather belt, you know, things like that, you know,
right?
Things that you guys have no comprehension of, you know. So, it was definitely, you know, the old school way approach of raising your kids, and my sisters can attest to that too, because I have two older sisters, one's you know, 11 years older, and another one's 8 years older. So, and they both got full ride scholarships also. So he definitely had the formula of getting his kids prepared for the next level. And it worked. One went to Florida State and another one went to Cal State Northridge for softball.
Okay.
And, yeah. And he was actually the U.S. women's national coach for a few years for the U.S. women's softball team.
And oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Wow.
And he was their coach before the Olympics. So he actually still won gold medals in Olympic festivals and the world championships before they made it to Olympic team.
Okay. That's crazy. Wow. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What a buy. So, you were right. Wow. You were right about that. Mike, can I interject for 1 second, Joey? You mentioned kids, and there's one very special fan of ours that I want to give a shout out to. Aiden Koyman, one of our friends of the group and a huge Notre Dame fan. I believe he and his parents are both tuned in the podcast. Wanted to say hi, Aiden. Thanks for joining the group. Welcome. And
hey,
please
buddy.
Enjoy our conversation with Joey Getherall, Irish legend. Who's up next? Who's got the next question, Mike?
Bruce has the next question, but first we got to take care of some business. We got to pay some bills, fellas.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I know. All right, folks, getting your music your way has never been easier with Audilus. Search AUDILOUS on your device and select your station or podcast from rock, country, top 40, hip-hop, alternative rock, and more. With over 17 different radio stations to choose from, Audilus is your place for FM-sounding radio with fewer commercials. Now, with those other music services, we're all tired of being forced to hear so many ads without paying for a subscription, right? Well, Audilus might be what you're looking for. Search AUDILOUS in the Google or Apple store today and enjoy free premium radio and podcasts right at your fingertips. Audilus, your music, your way. All right, Bruce.
Let's go Audilus. All right.
Yeah, Audilus, baby. No, I mean, what?
Bruce, before, is that an 18 jersey?
No, I wanted to, but I was trying to.
I saw the one. I was hoping it was an 8.
Look, I went to get one, and I even looked online because I was thinking all day. I was like, man, Joey wore 18, didn't he? And and my girl's like, yeah, he was 18. I said, you sure he wasn't 12? Wait a minute. I got to think back to when it was, but yeah. I thought that maybe I'd trick you by doing this.
Yeah, it looks like it. Let's keep it like that. Let's keep it.
Yeah,
like
let's that. Keep it that way. But no, it. One of my questions I like to ask, I asked Mark Edwards and he had some cool answers. What is your single favorite memory of your time at Notre Dame, whether it be on the field or off the field? You know, whether it be in the dorms. And then what was your favorite place to go, either on campus or off campus? Because we're all from there. We know all the places.
there's so many memories. You when you answer that question, it's so many things are just, mm-hmm. Going through my mind. And I can honestly say, just the friendships you make that I still have and cherish, the guys I still keep in contact with, the locker room memories, the practice memories, all those certain things. But in all honesty, when I think about being a part of the Notre Dame whole, I guess, tradition, the whole experience is. And going back to my dad, I want to bring this up since, we talked about him earlier. I remember my recruiting trip out there and he actually went with me. And I remember, having a few, having a few drinks with some of the guys that took me out for the recruiting trip and the experience. My host was actually, of course, my teammate Corey Miner from Bishop Mott, but he wasn't a big partier, so he gave me away to another Southern California guy, Brad Williams, who went to Mater Dei, and went out with him and a few other guys. And I remember they made sure I had a good time out there because I remember it was snowing. It was like a blizzard out there. And mm-hmm. when you're seeing down from a kid from California, you're like, oh, no way do I want to come out here. But I had a great time. And I remember waking up the next morning and not feeling too great. I think it was one of the first times I experienced that experience. So just right. in case, the younger crowd is listening, but I remember going to a meeting with counselors, the academic counselors, and meeting with one of the academic deans that makes the decisions who's coming to the school and who's not. And you're having one-on-one interviews with these, the deans, and my dad's sitting in there with me. I'm hungover. eyes are bloodshot. I'm probably reeking of alcohol. And I'm going, my dad's looking at me like, holy,
yeah.
wanted to kick my, you know what. And he's just looking at me going, yeah, there's your chance is gone. We might as well pack up and go home. And I remember sitting in there and he's just looking at me like going, I can't believe this is happening. So
you blew it.
I blew it. So they're asking me an array of questions and asking me, and I'm thinking, why are they asking me? My head hurts. I want to go back to the hotel and sleep. Mm-hmm. And I remember they're like, what's your favorite book that you've read lately? And I remember being, you know, half asleep in there thinking, I was like, the last good book I read was, or magazine I read was Sports Illustrated. And my dad looks at me like, goes, oh, are you kidding me? Not To Kill a Mockingbird, The Great Gatsby, something. And I said, Sports Illustrated. And, the dean looks at me, and the funny thing is I remember my senior year, I was speaking and he brought up that same story and he said, I remember your dad looked like he had that look of I can't believe he just said that, and his face just dropped and he were laughing about it. But I just was giving him short answers, and he said, I understood. It was the same interview that he gets every time from all the players. So, but that's one thing I popped up. But there's, like,
you said, Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. At least it wasn't Mad Magazine, right?
So those are exactly. So those are the things I remember, or, you know, great times are just running out. That first time running out in the new stadium that they built. Mm-hmm. Playing against Georgia Tech as being an 18-year-old kid playing in front of 80,000+ fans and just eating up the moment. And I remember I started that game and I caught the very first pass of the game and the first play of the game. Those are the things that you remember, and running out that last time in that tunnel, you know, playing against Boston College, because I can remember those things vividly. Those are some experiences and things you treasure, but don't really fathom as a kid. Because even though you're, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, you're an adult, but you're still a kid at the end of the day. And I think sometimes as fans, as adults, we look at these kids and forget that they're still kids.
Right.
They may, except for Sam Hartman. He's a grown man.
And he's been there 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
Sam Hartman is 24. His beard is 32.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought he was 33.
Right.
Yeah. But those are the things I think that I cherish. And, you know, the places that we all know are, you know, the Corbys, the linebacker, all those places that I haven't. I so many stories that I could remember I probably shouldn't be talking about on air, but yeah. So, those are the things you remember, and just those times. And Notre Dame's a great place because it eliminates the somewhat of the cliques and the clubs by not having sororities and fraternities. Mm-hmm. So you get that. You build that camaraderie with all those guys that in the dormitories, and it's. I think that's one of the great experiences and traditions that Notre Dame has, and I think that's one thing that I will cherish. Where I was able to meet a great bunch of guys at St. Edward's Hall. I stayed there, a couple years, and I stayed at Keough Hall, the new hall, for a year, and then my senior year lived off campus. But those few years were a great experience to meet a great group of people.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So, Joey, I wanted to ask you what the recruiting process was like, and which coach was the most influential in what was the deciding factor in coming to Notre Dame.
So I originally I was. Recruited by Coach McMahon. He passed away. He was the defensive back coach for Notre Dame, and he ended up going to Colorado. He's a defense coordinator, passed away of cancer. He was recruiting me. He was a West Coast recruiter, and Urban was the receiver coach at the time. He was his first year at Notre Dame. So those were the two guys recruiting me, and Coach Holtz was still the head coach at that time. So the recruiting process didn't start off too well because my junior year, Coach McMahon came out and tells Urban, I saw him. He's an athlete, but he might be, again, talking about the height, on the shorter side. And he might be a height challenged. And so Urban said, I got to go out there and take a look at him. So he actually comes out and flies maybe a few weeks later and watches spring ball and sees me play. But my coach at the time, they had a good relationship, my head coach, because, you know, Bishop Mon, that time we were the modern day of football. We were the number one in the nation. We had, you know, the Corey Minor, number one player, USA Today Player of the Year. Dalen McCutcheon, he was USA Today, I think, Offensive Player of the Year. So we had two guys, the Offensive Defensive Player of the Years from my high school, you know, Ralph Brown, another All-American, a lot of top-notch guys. He just says, you can't miss out on him. And he's like, I can't recruit him, regardless if you say I can't miss out on him. I can't go to Coach Holtz and say I'm recruiting this kid. And he jokes about it, and he loves to mention all the time, saying, I saw him get on that bench, and he was struggling with the 45s and thinking, really? So I actually have a bet with Urban this weekend on some push-ups for the game. Ohio State. Yeah. And I told him only 10 push-ups because I said he's gotten real soft being in announcing. So I said I'll only make him do 10.
You know, that's a funny story, because I had seen, I think it was your wife posted a picture of the football. I think.
Did we lose you, Bruce?
Had written to my favorite. No, I'm here. Am I here?
Okay.
Yeah, here.
Yeah, you froze for a minute.
To my favorite player of all time, Urban Meyer. Yeah. I mean, how did you guys connect and just, I mean, it was a down time at Notre Dame, and I'm not saying that against you or, you know, the players, you know, Corey and everybody else we talked to. But I, you know, that wasn't the highlight of the Notre Dame era. That was a dark era, and you were one of the few highlights. But the connection you have with Urban Meyer, I mean, I'm kind of curious how that, obviously he recruited you, but how did you guys bond and continue?
Yeah. I think it was a mutual respect. I think, and the funny thing you talk about down years, Urban even mentioned it. He's like, we should have won a national championship. And you know, it's one of those things where we had the talent, you know, a lot of those players were from Coach Holtz era, and Coach Holtz was getting the top players in the country. You know, you go down the list of all the players that we had 4 or 5 star athletes. We had the best of the best coming from all over the country.
Yeah, you know, Ron Paulus was your quarterback your freshman year.
Yeah, exactly. Jarius Jackson, who played several years in the NFL in Canada. I think he's still coaching in Canada. We had Autry Denson. We had big-time players. And it's just one of those things where we couldn't put it together. You know, Coach Davey, you know, great coach, but I just don't think he was ready for that big-time coaching at a big-time program. Was he a great defense coordinator? Yeah, awesome.
Absolutely.
Great defensive mind.
Yeah, but I think as a head coach, it's a whole different, ball game.
And well, just like Charlie Weiss, great offensive mind, but he couldn't. Yeah. It was head coach just wasn't in his wheelhouse. So
yeah, definitely a different type of dynamic of being a head coach and a defense coordinator, offense coordinator. But you know, Urban said, he said, if I had that, and you know his confidence definitely said, if I had that place, we'd win a national championship. But you know, things happen, and you know, it was some struggle for years. You know, Notre Dame will definitely they're looking good right now, so hopefully they keep it up. But our relationship, like I said, we had a good mutual respect. I think he definitely tried to get the best out of everybody, and he definitely had the Bobby Knight type of coach. And I'm sure we you know, you've seen it with interviews and the way his style. He definitely had the old school type of way of coaching, and no different than these other guys like the Nick Sabans. A lot of these guys, they expect you could even say, you know, who the hottest name in football we can all talk about is Deion Sanders.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. And, you know, people think that, yeah, he's definitely a player's coach, but he definitely expects the best out of his players. And there's no half-assing with him. It's right. He expects perfection. He may not get it, but he's expecting those kids to play their very effort. Best. Yeah. So, I think a lot of that is what these top coaches expect from their players. And one thing is, I think with Urban, he wanted 100% effort, and he wanted to make sure that you were doing things right on the football field. And that's what I did. I don't think he could ever question my effort. Whatever I did, I gave 100%. And if I could give more, I would give more. And I remember the very first meeting I had at Notre Dame. You know, it's kind of like the honeymoon is over. That first day, you know, they're recruiting. They're telling you,
oh, they love you. They love you.
They love you. Oh, we love you. This is going to be the best time ever. And you get there, you get up in that early morning call, and only the freshmen are on campus. And you get there, and you have the first meeting. It's, you know, myself and a couple other freshmen. And reality sets in where he walks in, not smiling, and says, "Hey, let's get to work. And just to let you guys know, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm not here to be your big brother, your father. I'm here to be your football coach, and I'm going to expect the best out of you guys, and I'm expect 100%, and that's it. You know, you're at Notre Dame. This is the pinnacle of college football. This is mm-hmm. this is it. Play for your school. You play for you know for God, your school, and Our Lady. So remember that." And I'm thinking, get ready for some football. So. I think from that standpoint, I knew what to expect. Even when he got loud and yelled and screamed, you know, that was his mentality, and he really meant it. It wasn't a show. He wanted the best, and he expected the best. And I think when I see when people talking about his health, and definitely I saw it take a toll on him when we would take losses at Notre Dame, it took a toll. I've seen him, you know, pass out on the sidelines in a game where he was in my head, and you know, so it definitely took a toll on him. But like I said, we had a mutual respect, and he knew what he was going to get from me, and from that standpoint, I knew what was coming from him, and I thought I thought it was nothing in comparison with my dad. So I thought he was pretty soft.
That's awesome that you, I mean, you guys even got a bet going. So we'll talk about that a little bit later when we do the Ohio State matchup.
So Sean, you have a question.
So it's funny that you talked about how it was different once you got there and they got you in that first freshman meeting, that breakout. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the movie, The Program.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of like where he gets off the bus and he's like, what happened to all the dancing honeys and all the good stuff you used to bring me here? They're like, well, we got you now.
I remember my freshman year, and I don't know if Notre Dame still does it, but we used to wear a black stripe in our helmet. We weren't allowed to wear the gold helmet because we weren't technically a part of the team. I would say, hey, it's hazing, but not a big deal to me. But they treated the freshmen like you had to earn your stripe. Right. But I was one of the very earliest freshmen to get that off. I was probably a week or week and a half into the fall football prior to the season. I had my stripe taken off because I was just I was just killing them out there,
right.
I was just getting open, and I remember the funny thing. I'm doing all this, but Urban was like, "You're horrible. Tell me the worst thing. I'm the worst out there." And he doesn't know why he recruited me, and I'll never see the field. I'm thinking, they just took my stripe off my helmet. And he's still telling me this, and I'm thinking, okay, I just go along with it and think, man, what do I need to do to get this guy on my side? So I remember probably a few days, like probably a few days before the game, the week of the game, he's saying, you know, you'll be lucky to get in the game. So just, you know, just be ready to, you know, sit out this year and you're probably going to redshirt. And the night that, and then I remember he doesn't let me know probably until 2 days before the game. He says, be ready. You're going to be starting this week. And I thought it was funny. You know, the mind games that these coaches try to play.
Oh, yeah. They do the same thing in the military.
It's just funny. So, like I said, it never fazed me. It's just funny, but you know, it's the way the cookie crumbles, and that's football, and that's football coaches. And like you said, military, I think sometimes people can handle it and some people can't. The top tier guys could handle it.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Outside of Notre Dame Stadium, did you have a favorite opposing school's field to play on?
Of course, it's USC. Every chance.
Coliseum.
To get a chance to stick it to them, you know, would be USC. But I played in a lot of great stadiums. I think Tennessee was another great one. I think we lost to them the year they won the national championship. Another great place was Michigan. But the loudest, I think, was definitely LSU at Death Valley. That place was deafening. And I heard it even is louder now because I think they have the stadiums like that now. Before it was just like that one side. And I just remember my ears were just ringing. And that's why you see a lot of guys wear tape on the helmets on the side. But that place was loud.
Was that the year you played LSU twice?
I believe so.
You played them in the bowl game, and then you had played them at Death Valley. And
yes,
I want to say I think Jarius got hurt in the second.
He got hurt when we were 10-1, and 9-1 or 10-1, and we beat LSU. We're running out the clock, and he got hurt at the very end of the game, the last play of the game. And next week we're USC, and we should have just destroyed them. And we're in the BCS contention, and we end up losing, I think, 9-6. It was some ridiculous game at USC.
It was like a mud bowl or something.
Mud bowl, and we played. Quarterbacks had about six turnovers, and it was just a bad game. But yeah, that's a bad game.
Bad game.
So yeah, so Bruce wanted to ask you about that Nebraska game in 2000. Go ahead, Bruce.
And actually, I want to ask about Nebraska. Everybody asked you about the punt return against Nebraska, but I was actually at the Air Force game, the game winner in 2000. There with my dad, and I didn't get to go to a lot of games with my dad growing up. I was lucky enough to see Notre Dame, Michigan at home, Michigan State. But every time I took my dad, you guys lost. And it's almost like a family joke. I'm like, you're not allowed to go anymore, dude.
Yeah.
I love you, but you can't go, Dad.
I blame it on you then.
Exactly. It's my dad. It's not me. But yeah, I remember the Nebraska game was huge, but that Air Force one, it was just as big. I mean, those two punt returns, I mean, kind of, what was the feeling when you broke free and you heard that crowd go?
And they I think when you're in that moment, I think everything just goes silent.
You know what?
Your body.
I've heard that before from another player.
Your body just goes silent. And you're in the. It's kind of like saying people, you're in the zone. And,
right.
It's you in the end zone. And I think certain situations, you're just in the zone, and everything is just even though it's deafening, it's just. That you don't hear anything audible, and it's like that in law enforcement when you're in any type of stressful situation or any type of officer involved shooting, your body takes over and everything goes silent. You don't hear anything because you know people ask, can you hear the shooting? It's so loud. No, everything just shuts down and you don't hear anything.
Right,
it's kind of the same situation. So when you do get that feeling, that rush of adrenaline, and you just have that feeling, you know what's going on. It just, everything shuts down. Everything's just quiet. and almost to the point where it's slow motion. Just like when hitters are in the zone, they see that big balloon, or you catch that punt, and you know. And that Air Force game, scoring that touchdown in overtime and getting smashed by all your players, it's one of those, experiences. It's euphoric. And I remember my dad used to have a big photo of guys carrying me on their shoulders off the field, and then one of our press guys, our guys saying, "Get him off. We need to talk to him because NBC is trying to do an interview with him. So like, don't take him anywhere." So
funny because Mark Edwards was a guy getting carried off, and I'm like, yeah. Okay, now I got Joey Getherall on here. But a funny story.
I'm a little easier to get carried off than him.
Yeah, well, Mark's a little thicker. But it was something, I don't remember if it was your wife or one of the other groups we're in, but somebody made a comment about the fastest punt returners, kick returners, and I made a comment about Rocket Ismail being the man. He is so fast. Your dad jumped on that post. Not only jumped on the post, he jumped at me. He went directly to my... Yeah, he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. Hold your beer, buddy. Because my son was a lot faster. And me and her dad had a little back and forth, and it was pretty humorous.
Yeah.
But,
we had a lot of fast guys. I remember Alan Rossum. They were talking about he's one of the fastest guys ever to come out of Notre Dame. You know, run 10 flats and being a track star there.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that they just would, I remember Urban would make me go every time, Alan, go against Alan, just sending me deep, every running post, streaks. They're trying to kill me. I'm thinking, my legs were gone. And I think it's unheard of as a freshman.
Right.
I remember Coach Davies say, "Hey, I even got to sit out of practice after being there for a week." He was like, "Hey, just let the kid rest his legs." And you never hear that of a freshman giving a practice off, you know. So,
yeah, the coach is saying just, he looks really tired.
Yeah, like let his legs rest because it was like almost like he had a new toy to play with, and it was just go run a streak, run a post.
Right, you'd be what they call now an athlete that they recruit. Yeah, what was your best 40 speed? Just out of curiosity.
I've run 4.2s in the past, and it was 4.3s consistently.
Your dad reminded me how fast you were, and I literally had to go back and watch. I'm like, Joey was fast.
I was a consistent 4.3 guy.
Oh my word, that's a ridiculous. Yeah.
And I think that's why I got to play as a true freshman, being my size and playing as a 150 pounds. I say 5'8", but I think the 5'7¾". But 150 pounds. I'm starting as a true freshman at Notre Dame.
5'7" as coach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. One of the other things I like to ask, the other players we talk to, is just how has your time at Notre Dame helped you prepare for your life after football? Whether it be the connections or the Notre Dame connection or family, brotherhood. I mean, what sticks out to you?
I think it all starts, not even with Notre Dame. I think it starts with your family, your upbringing, your parents, like I said, your mom and dad, how they raised you, grandparents, to prepare you for that situation when you go to a school like Notre Dame. It's definitely one of a kind, and going out there, being on your own, learning how to I was a little spoiled, washing my clothes, and you have mom doing everything for you, the little things that we take for granted. You grow up real quick being thousands of miles away from Southern California. We didn't have the FaceTime. Cell phones were brand new. We were just breaking out of the era of pagers and beepers. And, some people are like, what are those? So, because I remember the first cell phone I got was my freshman year. My dad's like, "Hey, we should get one of these cell phones." albums for you. And I think that was the first time, but it was a brand new thing. I think you only had so many minutes allowed to use.
Right. Yeah.
And then you wouldn't be allowed to use it. And if I did, it'd be like $100 a minute after that, mm-hmm. if I tried to use it. So it was one of those things where I learned a lot. You grow up real quick. We didn't have the era of social media, like I said, or FaceTiming, or the internet was new, all this stuff. I couldn't imagine having this video conference podcast back in the day. It's all absolutely. This technology. So, but definitely Notre Dame. And when I got there, prepared me, because you're around a lot of leaders, a lot of people that exude that leadership and are expected to be great in life. So coming out of that place, you're around people that want to be great. So the expectation when you leave is to be great. And so whatever I did in life, I exuded that confidence to know whatever I do was going to be great at it. And I think that started with my upbringing. And then when I got there, it just continued to translate, and being around people that were like my of wanting to be great. You know, even with the coaching staff, we had a lot of great coaches, and, you know, one of the greatest of all time in college coaching, Urban Meyer, you know, I was in the meetings with them each and every day. So you saw what he brought to the table, and he expected best. And I think being around all that prepared me for life and whatever I did. And I try to teach that to my kids and my boys, that I expect nothing but the best. And do I expect perfection? Yes. But do I think it's a reality? No, of course not. I know that there's going to be hiccups. You're going to make mistakes, and don't be afraid to make a mistake. Right. Give it 100%. And that's all we can ask for. You know, it's just one of those things where I have one kid that he's not afraid to make a mistake. He's out there and goes 100%. And then I have another one who has every ability to be great, but sometimes he's hesitant. And I try to tell him, hey, don't be afraid. Just go, mm-hmm. Let's go after it. And, you know, it's slowly translating, but it's just, you know, everyone is getting, their growth is different. And you got to be patient with that and just understand that. And it'll eventually happen. And I always tell them, I have confidence you to be the best. And you should believe that you're going to be the greatest and the best out there. And if you're not, still believe it. And I think, right. I think when we talked about Dion tries to exude that. He said he believes he's the best out there. And I think he tries to, you know, and I think all his players believe they're the best out there. And I think you saw it when that one kid who dropped the ball and he went straight to him and talked to him and gave him that little pep talk, hugged him. And you saw how he finished that game. He caught the, you know, the tying touchdown, or the touchdown at the end of the game to get him into overtime. And mm-hmm. That's what I think as coaches and parents and leaders, we should try to do that for all the future, because if we don't do that for them, you know, the future's not going to be great. And because, right. Unfortunately, we're living the era of everyone gets a trophy.
Oh, right. Man.
That's... Well, speaking of which, I already asked my question I was going to ask to kind of wrap it up before we get into the Ohio State game. But I've got one that I've asked a few other players, Mark Edwards. And it's kind of it's a two-parter, but you can choose either side of the aisle. You don't have to answer both. And it's a big thing that's going on right now, and that has to do with the transfer portal, and the new NIL. I mean, what are your thoughts on the way college football is trending with these things right now?
I think with the transfer portal and the NIL, I think they're two separate things. I think with the transfer portal, I think that sometimes that every situation is different. There are situations where that kid probably will never get an opportunity. He should probably transfer. Yeah, definitely. But if there's a stud in front of you, there's an All-American, you know, you got to wait your turn. I think that's the way we get better. If you look at it, in the past, that's how it was always done. You wait your turn, you sit behind, you learn. And I think that's the best way about doing it. You know, you see that kid from Alabama that was at Notre Dame, Tyler Buchner.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those things where, do I think he made a good decision? Probably not. You know, he had the opportunity to learn from a stud, you know, Sam Hartman, you know, threw for all these touchdowns and was technically could have probably been an All-American if he went to a big time college. He went to a smaller school. You know, he's a big time recruit, but I don't think he was getting recruited by the Notre Dames or the Alabamas.
Right.
Where now he showed what his ability was, and Notre Dame didn't really take a chance on. They knew what they were getting, and they wanted him. And I think it worked out for both sides. And Trenton going into the NIL, it worked for certain people. It may not work for everybody, but it definitely translated for a big plus for Sam Hartman. Do I believe he deserves every bit of that NIL money? 100%. And I'm sure all three of you can agree with me that absolutely, he's every bit of whatever he's getting paid, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, he's every bit deserving of that dollar amount or even more, because you could see all the revenue he's generating for Notre Dame, the big buzz. You see all the points they're putting on the board. He's breaking records right now. And right, if he beats Ohio State, he's going to be a Notre Dame legend.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think 3-4 games makes him a legend, but if he beats Ohio State, he'll be considered one of the best Notre Dame quarterbacks, and I'm sure he'll continue to roll. And if he beats USC against Caleb Williams, he's going to probably win the Heisman. And, you know, it's going to be up with Sam Hartman, Shedeur Sanders, and Caleb Williams. So, and I think, and you mark my words, if he runs the table, he's going to get an invite and possibly win the Heisman. You heard it on the podcast.
We heard it. Joey Gutherall called it. Joey called it.
So, speaking of all that,
you know what? I don't think anyone disagrees with you though either.
Yeah.
Joe.
That's
if you can do something like that with the schedule they have this year, that would be, I mean, he's already approaching the top 5 all time touchdown completions.
That happens when you're 46 years old. When I'm not complaining.
But you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Right. You made a good point too about people transferring to get that opportunity, to finally get that opportunity. Another example I'll give you just in recent memory is Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on the bench at Ohio State. He wasn't going to start. No. He went to LSU, won a national championship.
Yeah,
there's guys that, as you said, Joey, you've got to be a self-motivator, you got to be a self-starter, especially if you're on the bench behind one or two All-Americans. What's going to keep you going? You've got to be self-motivated to do that.
100%. And I think when that's what I was trying to go in with Tyler Buchner, I think that he had the chance to go out of bounds, but I think it would have been great. He was the person I was talking about, should have sat behind Sam Hartman, learned all he could and tried to get every bit of information. And the funny thing is, he would have still been playing this year. They would have put him in certain packages, running packages with a quarterback, kind of what New Orleans Saints do with their quarterback, that that guy that went to BYU.
Taysom Hill.
The bodybuilder. Yeah.
He's a tight end slash defensive end slash fullback.
A linebacker playing a quarterback. So I think that definitely been beneficial for him to see how it's done. But he didn't. But you said Joe Burrow is a perfect example of somebody that needed to go to the transfer portal and get that opportunity. Like he would have been a perfect example. But I just saw something about Ohio State has a lot of the, you know, 5-star quarterbacks and prospects, but they can't evaluate them. And they're showing Quinn Ewers, but Quinn Ewers should have stayed at Ohio State. He'd be playing right now, but it worked out for him at Texas also. But I'm sure if he has one bad game, they want him because they have Manning sitting in the.
They got Archie sitting back there.
He's sitting back there and waiting his turn. So he's in a situation where he'll just, you know, play that one good year this year and he'll be gone.
Right.
I think it'll work out for him. But yeah, definitely. I think every situation is different for the transfer portal, but I think it got out of control, and I think NCAA wasn't prepared for that. NCAA is somewhat of a joke, and I think they it's a kangaroo court borderline, and
it's they just like make the Wild West.
They go, yeah,
yeah. I mean, you throw NIL in there, you got coaches recruiting players from other schools. Hey, we need a quarterback, but we got this company out here, which is a booster. Like Michigan uses boosters, Colorado uses boosters. Hey, we got a $2 million a year. You know, these guys are making more money than they would on a rookie contract in the NFL.
Well, and it's tough to compete with it's tough to compete with like Oregon, who has the founder of Nike. That's different money, guys. That's not a million or two. That's ridiculous. Well,
look at USC. Look at USC. They have absolutely a bunch of donors, a private school.
Snoop Dogg.
They have unlimited money at USC. Excuse me. And, that's why they were getting Jordan Addison, Caleb Williams, and all these different receivers. They're able to pay all those guys, and they have big donors, and they're in the West Coast. They have a lot of companies, and you would think Stanford would get everyone with all those tech companies up there and all but I don't know what they're doing, but
So well, you would we'll think see. That with Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame has got
Notre
some
Dame
of the
is
riches.
Getting. Hey, Notre Dame is getting. They got Sam Hartman.
They did. It's going to be nice.
They're getting big time recruits because I think that should be a red flag for coaching staff if you've got players knowing that going to these big schools asking how much money they're going to be getting paid. I think
Dante that's Moore.
Yeah, and I think when they hear that, I think that you've got to somewhat say, "Ugh," unless he is the for sure. Five-star talent that we're going to get, then you make that exception. But if he's, somewhere on the cusp and, that guy you're unsure of, then we might go a different route. But for the most part, Notre Dame. Those can't pass athletes, you might have to pay them. That's the unfortunate side of NIL. But I think that's the biggest thing. And I keep referring to Colorado because that's the biggest thing. At the end of the day, we all know college football, it's a business, and
it is
it, regardless of what we say or do. And it was a business when guys weren't getting paid because the coaches were still getting paid millions of dollars.
Right.
The revenue of these colleges, Notre Dame, the football teams, the money generated is paying the professors, is paying everybody, it's paying everyone on campus. If you say
you were probably eating ramen noodles, and you were eating ramen noodles
100%. PB&Js and ramen noodles. I played in the wrong era.
Easy mac and cheese.
Yeah,
and
I'm like thinking they were selling my jersey, all over the place my senior year. And I remember them telling me I had to keep number 18 because, and I remember Adidas reps were telling me, no, you've got to keep the number 18 because I wanted to change my number my senior year.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I wanted to change.
What'd you want to change to?
I wanted to change to my high school number. I wanted to go to number 2 and change my number, but they said for me to keep it because they were selling they were selling the number 18 at the store, so I just end up keeping it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just see that's the stuff we never hear about.
Yeah, you don't hear about that stuff. And funny thing is, I even wore Nike shoes my senior year, but I painted them with Adidas symbols, and
you did.
If you ever see like pictures or photos, you'll see the shoe is actually a Nike shoe that I colored and painted, and the Adidas rep says, I told the coaching staff, and you're luckily Coach Davey is allowing you to do it, but you should be. I'm thinking, okay, we're winning, so I think that's why it never was.
Yeah, it's like whatever. Right. It's just a couple slashes across.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Swoosh.
Yeah, so I did a good
job. That's awesome,
with that.
Joey. This has been awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on, dude. This has been awesome. Awesome.
All right, so the Buckeyes come to Notre Dame Stadium for the first time since 1996. Now, Joey. At first glance, what's your take on this matchup?
I think this year it's talent versus talent. I think you can't say that Notre Dame, you always hear it, but Notre Dame always has the athletes, and it's just, I think now we've recruited that speed, and I think you could go athlete for athlete against Ohio State. I honestly believe we have every ability to beat them this year. That running game is legit with that Estime. He looks like Jerome Bettis out there with better speed. And you got Sam Hartman out there. You got some, you know, young receivers, but they look good. I think he's going to put it in places where they're going to excel. I think last week they had two guys with 70 plus yard touchdowns. So yeah, you definitely have the athletes out there. And I think, Freeman exudes that confidence, and I think with that leadership of him and Hartman, I think they exude that leadership, and it's translating and on everybody. And I think they believe they could beat everybody, and I think that's what's going to happen this week. And the defense is looking great. So, in all honesty, I think we should win, and I believe that we will win.
All right, so Sean, let's talk about this Notre Dame offense versus this OSU defense.
Speed on speed.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got great speed on our offensive side of the ball. You've got very good speed on the Ohio State, and typically any Ryan Day coach team, they're going to have speed on their defense. They can match SEC teams, so they're going to be able to, you know, match up pretty well with anyone in the nation. I think, and Joey touched on it just a second ago, I think the difference this year, as you said, Joey, is the athleticism is at a level, in my opinion, that we haven't seen in a while. We have absolute studs, playmakers at the wide receiver position, at the running back position. Audric Estime, he certainly could be this generation's iteration of Jerome Bettis. The scary thing is he can hurdle people standing up.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be able to do that when you're as big as he is. We talked about this before. 5'10 and 227 is what he's listed. Come on. He's a few biscuits over 235. He's close to 240. Okay, he is. And if you can do what Audric Estime does and have that kind of breakaway speed that we saw in the NC State game where he's just putting distance between himself and DBs, Audric Estime needs to be the workhorse in this game, in my opinion, to soften up that Ohio State defense and also to make that play-action pass that much more effective. I mean, a 76-yard touchdown pass to Chris Tyree and a 75- or 74-yard touchdown pass to Tobias Merriweather, those could be that could be foreshadowing for this game, because if you establish that run game early and often and you're effective with it and they have to buy in and sell out to defend against the run, you're just going to open things up that much more for those playmakers that we have at the wide receiver position. I'm not saying it's going to be pretty, but I think that we are going to match them step for step in scoring, and I think we have a very good chance of matching them on the defensive side of the ball too. It's going to come down to, in my opinion, it might come down to who has the ball last. It really might. It might. Mm-hmm. It has the makings of Notre Dame, Florida State, 1993. It could come down to who has the last possession and who wants it more. But I think that we're going to be with them every step of the way in this ball game. And I do think that if they play to their potential, they're going to distance themselves from this Ohio State defense and come out with a victory.
Yep. Bruce, what do you think?
No, I mean, I agree. And I mean, offensively, we have the weapons, you know, like Joey said, I mean, we do have studs. We have a five-headed monster running back. We got wide receivers that, you know, Rico Flores has been getting more game action, Jaden Greathouse, Tobias Merriweather.
Hey, real quick, I don't mean to jump in, but you mentioned Florida State. My sister went there. The funny thing is Charlie Ward, you know, family.
Oh.
Yeah, so he was actually, my sister and him dated each other for a while.
Oh,
wow. Really? Yeah. Well, that's cool.
We ought to get Charlie on here.
Yeah, so he actually actually came to my high school and spoke to my high school when they were out here for when they used to have the Playboy All-American team.
Right. Oh, okay.
He actually came in school and spoke to my team.
Well, the funny thing about Charlie is he ended up going to basketball.
Yes,
he played for basketball. The Knicks, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, was it the Knicks?
Yeah, I think he wanted to actually play football. He wanted to play football, but they didn't draft him high enough, and he said, "I'm going to play basketball." His heart was in football, but I think he made the wise choice. He played 10 plus years in the NBA. So,
Sorry to Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah.
Yep, Jeff, exactly. I could play football, but I think I'm going to play baseball instead, where I have a little more longevity.
Yeah. I wish I played baseball at Notre Dame. That's my one only regret at Notre Dame. I didn't play baseball.
Well, now, were you at school the same time as Craig Counsell, or was he before you?
No, he was before me. He actually played with one of my teammates from high school. All-Star Mike Young. Played for the Rangers and Alex Rodriguez for all those years. He was actually a senior when I was a freshman, so we went to the same high school. And he actually came out, and Craig Counsell, I remember him mentioning that him and Craig Counsell came out to watch me play out in the football game.
Oh wow. Yeah, it's funny because Pat Murphy is on his staff now.
Yeah, Pat Murphy
used to coach the baseball team.
Yeah. And Pat Murphy actually coached another one of my high school teammates, and at Arizona State when Pat Murphy was at Arizona State. Yep. And Eric Valenzuela is now the head coach at Long Beach State now.
Oh wow!
Who was it? The head coach at baseball at my time was I just went blank. He went to LSU and won a national championship.
Happens to the best of us.
Paul Manieri. Paul Manieri.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, so he actually, I told him, he said he had thought I was going to play my freshman. I thought I was going to play my freshman year, and he expected me to play. And last second, I just said, no, I'm going to concentrate on football, because I was like, football is everything. You have all the fans, and I was like, I don't want to play baseball, but I was all baseballed out, you know, because that's all I did with my dad. That was always on the field, because especially with my sisters, always watching softball games, always hitting the ball. Okay. And I spent a lot more time playing baseball. I was a better baseball player than football player, because that's all I did was catch the ball, throw the ball, hit the ball all day long. So
yeah, I think loved I was baseball as a kid. Out.
So if I were to do it all, and like I said, I would played baseball, especially Manieri wanted me to play so bad. And I remember my senior year, he wanted me, actually, he's like, when I didn't get drafted but I still got picked up by a Steelers, he called me and said, hey, you know what, I know you didn't get drafted, I know you're still signing, but maybe you should think about coming back for a fifth year and just playing baseball. He threw that on the table for me, and he said, I'll get you out and to play out in the Cape Cod League, spend a summer just working on hitting, doing everything, and come back for your fifth year.
What position did you play?
I was a center fielder. I played middle infield my whole life, but then my senior my junior year I went to the outfield, and just played outfield because the guys playing were pretty good. Like I said, we had studs, Mike Young, and another guy that actually played ahead of Mike Young. And Mike Young played in the outfield and didn't even play middle infield until he got to the majors. Yeah, he was drafted. The shortstop there was drafted third round, and he played in the minors. And then one of my good friends, he was another middle infielder. He got drafted by the Marlins. So we had a lot of studs go to, like, another guy that you probably heard of, Danny Heron, pitcher for the Dodgers for many years, A's. He was on my team and never pitched a game in high school. That's how good our high school baseball team was. Yeah, we had a lot of studs. Yeah.
And just like you said, we talked about before, just waiting your turn.
Right? Yeah, waiting your turn. He went to Pepperdine and started pitching at Pepperdine. So he had a live arm and saved his elbow all those years and pitched in college.
That's a decent baseball school, and I'm
I'm
underselling it quite a bit by saying that. Jeez,
Pepperdine was the thing back in the day.
Yeah,
Pepperdine
was a beast. And Cal State, Cal State Fullerton. Well, that Big West was they had a bunch of teams: Cal State Fullerton and Pepperdine. UC Santa Barbara.
Arizona State was pretty
studs,
big for a while there too.
Yeah. They were in the Pac-10, you know. So or now the I guess.
Pac,
I don't know.
The artist formerly known as the Pac-12, right?
But those two teams that are left are going to play some, they got some good football still, Oregon State and Washington State.
Yeah.
So absolutely. This matchup, Notre Dame, Ohio State, we have a game this Saturday. so one thing, before I
we're
go to Sean,
fun.
We are, we're having a blast. I mean, a whole hour with Joey Gethrol already. I mean, who else gets to do this, right?
Yeah, what better than that?
So, before I go to Sean about, before we talk about our next topic, one thing I wanted to touch on about this Notre Dame offense versus this OSU defense is that OSU hasn't seen a quarterback like Sam Hartman. And one thing that's been lacking in our play in general, when we have these matchup plays, right, these matchup games, is Notre Dame has always been lacking at the quarterback position. So that was one of the things, that was one of the key factors last year, was our quarterback play. So I think this is going to be an interesting matchup because Ohio State, we're going to talk about this in the next topic, but you know, it's interesting to see how Ohio State is going to match up against a quarterback, you know, who's actually is a very, very well-polished, experienced quarterback. And this is going to be very interesting to see how they manage that because, you know, this isn't Western Kentucky. This isn't Indiana. You know, it's the same thing for us. This isn't Navy. This isn't Tennessee State. So I'm really excited about this matchup. So, Sean, real quick, let's talk about this OSU offense versus the Notre Dame defense.
Well, you know, I think the elephant in the room here is Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean,
oh yes,
we have Benjamin Morrison. I thank God that we have Benjamin Morrison because we are going to need him this weekend.
DJ
Marvin
Brown,
Harrison
Cam Hart.
Jr. is look. Marvin Harrison Jr. is an NFL athlete. He is NFL
for sure.
Ready. And
just look at his name.
With the pedigree that he has and the stats that he's put together already, you know, he's the real deal. I think you're not going to you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. And I think the Notre Dame defense is best served by trying to just be as disruptive to McCord as we possibly can. Now, we're talking about a freshman quarterback that looked a little shaky through his first two games, but he looked pretty confident in that last game. And as a freshman, you either deer in headlights or you feel the fear, right? If he's not feeling the fear, if he's not getting pressure, if we're not getting pressure on him, I don't know how we're going to slow this Ohio State offense down. I think we've got to pressure. We've got to pressure McCord. We've got to force him into some poor decisions, some bad throws. And we just got to make sure that we man mark against this, you know, this receiving core that we're going to see, which it is, in my opinion, going to be one of the most talented, if not the most talented, receiving cores we're going to see this year. Now we've got USC coming up too, so that's they're right up there as well as far as personnel goes. But I think it's an absolute gift that we are getting JD Bertrand back for this game. We're going to need him. We are absolutely going to need JD Bertrand, and we're going to have to get some frontline pressure and get some penetration through this O-line if we're going to be able to be disruptive to OSU's offensive game plan. What do you think, Bruce?
No, I agree 100%. I mean, we got to have the defensive pressure on the quarterback. For the first time in a long time, Ohio State doesn't have
an experienced quarterback.
An experienced elite quarterback, and I think that's
And he's not the dual threat guy either.
No.
Really, he's not. Of the two that they were choosing between leading into the regular season,
yeah,
McCord's not the dual threat quarterback. Actually, I think that plays in our favor, but
yeah, I mean, it's like I said, Notre Dame's going to show up offensively. We're going to do what we got to do. Defensively, I mean, we have the backfield with Cam and Benjamin Morrison, with Kaiser and Bertrand back there. You're going to get Jalen Sneed. You're going to see him a lot. And out of the three big games that I looked at going into the season, which was Clemson, USC, and Ohio State, because of the quarterback situation at Ohio State, I'm pretty confident going into this game. You know, we're going to have the green out. We're going to have the green jerseys. I think we have the right coach. I think we have the right quarterback. I think we have the right attitude. It's a we attitude. You know what I mean? There's a teammate brotherhood. It's not I anymore. And it's the standard, the Notre Dame standard that you keep hearing the players talk about when it comes to Marcus Freeman and laying that on the players. It's the, this is the standard. You fumble, you sit.
Right.
You know, when he said estimate, I mean, that sets the standard. And mm-hmm. I think going forward, we're gonna have a great, fun season.
Yeah. You know, like Sean touched on, these are probably going to be the best receivers that our defense is going to see this year, with the exception of maybe USC. Defense has got to step it up. But this is, I think this is probably one of the better defenses that they're going to, that Ohio State's going to see. I think this is going to be one of the most physical defenses that Ohio State's going to see. I think this mm-hmm. is probably going to be the best secondary that Ohio State's is going to see. The stadium's got to get loud. I mean, with the Clemson game last year, that stadium was so loud, it was vibrating. It was just thunderous. And the same thing needs to happen on Saturday. When Ohio State has the ball, you got to get loud. Stomp those feet, bang on anything you can find to bang on. Get that stadium loud to throw their quarterback off, because their quarterback has not been in an environment like this. So that is a right. huge advantage for our defense.
And Joey, you guys all make great points, and I think in all honesty, it's all great points. That young quarterback, and I've watched a little bit of Ohio State. I think it's important that our defense definitely disguise coverage, you know, mix it up with zone and man. I mm-hmm. think with Harrison, he's elite. You know, he's once in a lifetime type player, and you know, and then they have another kid as another possible first round player at wide receiver, and then they got their third string is another NFL caliber player, yeah. Fleming, where he was a 5-star, yeah. I think, coming out. Yep. So all three, and I think their fourth guy is another 4 or 5-star, you know, kid. So I don't think that I think they're not going to have any issues at wide receiver. But I think our job, as you talked about, we have some studs playing at corner, mm-hmm. the Morrison, that other young kid, Mickey. We have the other corners, another stud, the fifth-year kid. We have definitely the athletes to compete against them, but I think
Absolutely.
To help, I think we definitely have to do some bracket coverage where they're, you know, they're double-teaming some of these receivers and confuse that quarterback. He's getting confused by these no-name colleges, and I'm not knocking on these smaller colleges. They've still got, you know, Division I caliber athletes, but if he's having trouble against that, because the speed of the game is going to be a lot different for these younger kids that are played against the Navy, played against different players. But, you know, North Carolina State's is a tough defense, actually, and I don't want to knock them because they are a top tier defense in the NCAA. But the speed of the game is going to be a lot different this coming weekend. So I think it's important for them to confuse that quarterback, put pressure on them, bracket coverage, a little bit of a disguise out there to confuse it. But I think that speed of Notre Dame with that other kid who looks like a stud. I know Bertrand's good, but that's
Kaiser.
I think it. No, who's that kid? Maris Lefau.
Oh, Lefau.
Yeah. Oh yes, my sir. God, that kid is a stud. He reminds me of that guy from the 49ers. That linebacker, strong safety kid for the 49ers. Yeah, he was moving around the field. I don't want to say Troy Polamalu, because Troy Polamalu was on another level.
That's another level.
Yeah. So, but definitely I think our defense is going to be able to compete against Ohio State. And I agree. Think they're going to surprise a lot of people this weekend against Ohio State.
So picks to click on offense and defense. Who wants to go first? I usually don't assign anybody. This is like a free call.
I let Joey Gutherall go first.
All right. So Joey, who's your picks to click on offense and defense? The player who's going to have the best game?
I think they're gonna allow that offensive line to wear down Ohio State's defensive line and linebackers, and they're just gonna pound them and pound them. So I think I think Audric Estime is going to have a big game, and he's just going to pound them and pound them and pound them and pound them for 150 plus yards.
There we go. I like that.
Go for it, Bruce, Sean.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, actually, do your defensive pick, Joey.
Oh, my defensive pick. It's. I think it's going to be. I've got to go with Notre Dame secondary, not just one player. I think.
Oh, so the whole secondary. There you go.
Whole secondary, because they're going to be going against probably, like you mentioned, probably the best bunch of wide receivers in college football. With and I think they're better than USC's. You know,
I agree.
I think they, when you have two first round picks and you have an elite, one of a kind wide receiver in Marvin Harrison, I think if you could stop them, which they will, I think they're going to put themselves on the map this weekend.
Wow, I like it.
All right, who's next?
So the Notre Dame secondary. That's my pick.
I like it.
And estimate.
Sean's going to pick the whole defense, and he's going to pick the whole offense.
Here we go. Here we go. No, you know what? I think something important to point out here. Defensively, I think we were good, not great last year. And I bring that up because if memory serves, and I don't have the exact statistics in front of me, but we held Marvin Harrison Jr. to, I want to say, less than 60 yards receiving last year. Now, granted, he's gotten better since last year, which is a scary thought, but I think Benjamin Morrison has also really come into his own since then as well. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I love that pick, Joey, the Notre Dame secondary. And I'm in total agreement. I also think that our linebackers have to absolutely have a game. I think they've got to be disruptive. I think they've got to get penetration, and they've got to hit this kid early and often and just get him out of rhythm, because he strikes me as the type of quarterback that he'll get happy feet and start either air mailing or short arming his throws once he takes a couple of hits and realizes, I really don't like this, you know. I'm going to say J.D. Bertrand comes back and has himself a game. I'm going to go with J.D. Bertrand as my pick to click on defense, because you took the Notre Dame secondary, and I'm not going to do that because I already get crap from these guys for taking more than one or two players. So, but that's that. Like I said, that is a great pick, and I do think of the Notre Dame secondary, Benjamin Morrison has got to be the most effective, in definitely my opinion. On the offensive side of the ball, you know, I can't avoid it this time, guys. I got to say it. It's Audric Estime. It has to be Audric Estime, because when you have a player like that beating on you, because he runs angry, and I love it. When you got a player that's playing that angry and running at you through four quarters of football, just beating up your line, beating up your linebackers, beating up your secondary, when he gets to that next level, you're going to get tired of trying to stop this guy. It's like trying to tackle a wrecking ball. Where do you hit him? You know, I think Audric Estime is going to have a really good game. I think he is going to set the tone for this offense. In a manner of speaking, I think it's also going to be Sam Hartman, but I think Audric Estime is the one that truly opens up the playbook for the Irish offense this game. And I like Joey's, I like your estimation there that he'll go for over 150. I hope he does. I don't know if I don't know if he's going to get quite that much, just because we've also got Jeremiah Love and Jabron Payne. And I think as physical as this OSU defense is going to be, they're going to have to give Audric Estime some spells in there too, just to catch his breath and get his wind back. I think Audric Estime is going to go for over 100. I hope he goes for 200. That'd be great. But I think he goes for over 100. And I think Jeremiah Love sneaks in there and he goes for over 50 to 75 as well. And I want to say he might add a touchdown also. But Audric Estime is my pick to click on offense. Who you got, Bruce?
Wow, you guys just destroyed me, but I'm going with Joey on defense. I'm not going to lie, because I was already thinking about the defensive secondary, because if they're not there, then we're going to lose this football game.
I don't ever want to hear any crap from either of you guys again.
I'm allowed.
Joey, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about these two, okay? I'll pick Riley Mills and Jack Kaiser, and they're like, you can't pick two. And I'm like, but if they both deliver.
Okay, Marvin Harrison Jr. and company, you got to go with the entire secondary, because if they don't step up, this game is gonna get out of hand quickly.
You're right.
So I agree with that. So my entire defensive secondary is in there. Offensive though, I'm going a little bit off curve here, because I'm going Mitchell Evans. Notre Dame has to find the tight end this week. I believe with our wideouts, you know, Deion Colsey hasn't been around. I don't know what's going on with him. Tobias has been hit or miss. Jaden Greathouse has been awesome. You know, we're hitting spots, but Mitchell Evans is going to have a great game, because if Notre Dame is going to win, we're going to win in the trenches. I do believe that with Audric Estime and company, but you're going to have to find the tight end. Tight end's going to have to play a big, big part of this football game. And, you know, the easy pick would be Sam Hartman. You know, first time we have an elite quarterback going against a big time school like this, big matchup.
We're leaving that one for Mike.
Yeah, we're going to leave Mike with Hartman, but I'm going to take Mitchell Evans.
Let me ask you one question about that real quick, though, Bruce. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have an issue with that, because Mitchell Evans is an upperclassman. You know, he's going to bring a certain veteran presence and poise to this tight end group, especially in a game like this. But do you think that he's going to have a better game than Holden Stays, who's had four touchdown catches in the last three games?
I do. Yeah, and I think the leadership's going to show up there. I'm not saying Holden Stays is not a great tight end, believe me.
Oh, no.
But when we have two of them, I expect Mitchell Evans to take charge and move forward from that point.
Speaking of tight ends, is Eli Raridan, is he recovered from injury?
Still out. He's going to be out for this game. As far as what I read yesterday, they said he is not going to be back. But stepping up in his absence, Holden Stays, I mean, he has been nothing but impressive. And Mitchell Evans, this is his first game, but he was in concussion protocol, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he's back from that, which is, you know, we're thankful for that as well.
This is tight end you, right, Joey?
Definitely. Definitely.
Right. All right, so my pick to click is going to be probably Chris Tyree. I'm not going to pick Hartman. I think Hartman.
Really?
Hartman is going to be, I think Hartman's the obvious pick. It's an easy pick. So I'm going to say Chris Tyree. Look, it happened in NC State. Deep ball to Tyree. Been waiting for that all year. I think it's going to happen again in Ohio State. I think they're going to do it early because, you know, why not, right? So I'm going to say Chris Tyree. I'm going to the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to go with Maris Lufau. I think he's going to have a pick. Matter of fact, I think he's going to have a pick six.
Lufau with a pick six.
Yes, and that hair is going to be like flailing in the wind while he's running, right?
Listen,
so he might get a hair shampoo contract.
The Palomalu.
Joey, Mike had this thing. Yeah. Mike had this thing with Chris Tyree getting a breakaway touchdown catch in the open field and just running away from people.
Yeah. And it finally happened.
Like, I can see it happening. I can see it happening. It started like mid-season last year, and I agreed with him. I just wasn't sold on it last year because he was still at the running back position. He had to catch it out of the backfield, and he's like, it's going to happen. I'm like, all right. And then it happened last week, and I'm like, and there it is, Mike. There it is.
All right, guys. Final score predictions before we wrap up. Who wants to go first?
Does our guest want to go first?
All right, I'll go
last. He doesn't want to go first. I got you. Okay. Bruce, you want to go first?
I'll go first. I've been thinking about this one a lot. I think it's going to be a tight one. I don't think it's going to be a crazy scoring game. I'm looking at Notre Dame 31-27 Ohio State.
I got 35-31 Irish.
Okay. We've seen some interesting kicks from Spencer Schrader this year, haven't we? We've seen him set an all-time Notre Dame Irish record.
Oh, man, don't.
Don't jinx it.
No, don't jinx it. It's just like I forgot about that. That's a possibility of the game, and I just got.
It is.
My heart just sank in my stomach. I'm like, oh, God, not one of these games.
However.
59-yarder to win it.
I was just going to say. If it comes down to it, I think this, first of all, the kid's got the leg. He's got the leg, and he's got the moxie. I hope he has the accuracy. I do think this is going to be a shootout. I think this is going to be an absolute slugfest, and I don't see either team pulling away with it in the fourth quarter. I do think that we are going to get into the 40-point range again for the fifth time consecutively. Yes, I do. I think this is going to be a tough one. I can see it. Man, oh man. I'm going to say Notre Dame 44, Ohio State 38. I don't know why that's coming to me. I say 45.
Okay.
I think it's going to be an offensive. It is. I think it's going to be an offensive slugfest.
If it is, it is.
I'll take a victory.
I think Joey's going to nail it.
I definitely think it's going to be back and forth. I think it's going to be a close one. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, but I think it's going to be, like I said, I think someone mentioned it's going to be a last possession game. Whoever has the ball last or makes a mistake at the end, and that other team's going to capitalize on it. It's going to be, I think, 37-34 or 34-31. It's going to be a 3-point game, and I think it's going to be a close one, and Notre Dame's going to pull it out in the fourth quarter.
I like it.
I truly believe they're going to win.
Wait a minute. There we go. I'm like back.
You'll get it figured out eventually.
Yeah.
But we got it. Sean, you're out. You got crazy numbers.
They're all close.
All right. All right, folks. If you would like to support this podcast, one of the ways you can do that is to subscribe, rate, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also just simply tell a friend or a family member or even a neighbor. Just shoot us an email at leprechaunconnection@gmail.com if you'd like to reach out to us. Also, please check out our Patreon. Just go to patreon.com and search Leprechaun Connection. Just $3 a month for general support. It does help keep this podcast going. It also helps fund tailgates and watch parties. Gentlemen, any final thoughts before we wrap up and get out of here?
Oh, one quick one, Joey. Are you coming up to South Bend this year?
I don't know. My wife mentioned it. It's just it's somewhat hard with
logistics,
but I'll definitely try to figure something out. We'll definitely think about coming out to a game.
Yeah, we will be tailgating this game, and we will be at the corner of Twickenham and Angela, our normal spot. So come and find us for those of you who are out there. Mm-hmm. Now, we will also be tailgating and doing a live on-location broadcast at the USC game. So, if you happen to be out at the USC game, Joey, we'd love to have you come down, have a seat, do a pregame show with us. That'd be awesome. Guys, if there's nothing else, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Visit our Facebook page to stay on top of everything Irish. And to our friends here in the Michiana area, and to all our friends across Irish Nation, thank you so much for listening. For Sean, Bruce, and Joey, we thank you again for coming on the show. I'm Mike McClure. Join us here next time, right here on the Leprechaun Connection podcast. And everybody says, go Irish!
Go Irish!
Go Irish! Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, hold Joey. On real quick. Real quick, Joey.